In April, the ISB discussed the comment received on the proposed screening test and decided to make the screening test optional. Today, we are going to discuss all the other proposals included in the exposure draft, the definition of business. We have 9 issues and more than 15 recommendations. So I will go issue by issue. I will ask you if you agree with our recommendation for each issue. So maybe in this way it's easier to understand.
Yeah, rather than all at the end.
Okay. The first issue is the minimum requirements to be a business. As explained in paragraph 6 of the paper, in the exposure draft, the board proposed to clarify that to be a business, a set of assets and activities must include, at a minimum, an input and a substantive process that together contribute to the ability to create outputs. Almost all the respondents agree with this principle. We receive only a few comments on this. Today we are recommending to add the word significantly to these minimum requirements. So the sentence will be, the minimum requirements are an input, a substantive process that together contribute significantly to the ability to create outputs. We are proposing to add this word to explain the importance that the acquired process should be important to the creation of outputs. Do you agree with this recommendation?
Mary.
I agree, but something occurred to me that I want to check with you in that relates to both this and the market participant comments later on, which is I think that an underlying theme of several of the clarifications that we proposed is that the what we're telling people to aim for is to objectively evaluate whether or not this is a business, whether what you've acquired is a business, not do you intend to use it as a business? That's kind of the internal sales point later on, and not did you acquire all of what was the business in the seller? Because it could be that seller has multiple businesses, say, and it's going to sell you a piece of that. You're not, what you're trying to assess is whether the package that you bought is a business, rather than did you acquire all of the business in the seller's hands. So that when some of the comment letters, a couple of the comment letters that you quoted here, it talks about what is it that you didn't get that the seller had. I think those comments aren't, you know, those comments from the comment letters say that people didn't get that we were saying just look at the package you got rather than, you know, did I leave behind 3 pieces? You may have left behind 3 pieces that may or may not matter, because the question is what you bought a business when you look at the package of what you bought?
This is exactly our intention.
Okay.
Maybe so, the wording is
right.
Not very
so
clear.
I think significantly is the right and proportionate response, but it points out to me something that I think we might want to try and make clearer when we ultimately get to a basis about what the objective of this evaluation is.
Sue?
I don't object at all to the word significantly, but I was a little bit lost why it was needed. Maybe Mary just gave me the answer and I was too busy reading the comments again to see if I was missing something. But I didn't understand what it was that people were confused by that we think significantly is fixing. Is it that they thought that that you could have a little insubstantial process and that would be enough to tip you in?
I think it comes back to, if you look in paragraph 7A, we're right after footnote 2, it says it's not fully clear to us how many inputs and or processes would have to be included. I think what the staff's input of significantly, you know, a suggested addition of significantly would give us is it's not kind of a head count or a proportion of what was there.
It doesn't have to be everything. It has to be enough that it has a significant effect.
Yeah.
Because we are fixing the minimum requirements.
Okay.
The minimum.
Okay.
Okay. The second issue, Mary has already explained the second issue, I think. However, is is the market participant. In the exposure draft, we are proposing to remove from paragraph B8 of FRS 3 the statement that a set of asset activities is a business if market participant can replace the missing elements and continue to produce outputs. Some respondents think that this removal is inconsistent with paragraph B11. You can find in the paper B8 and B11. We think that these two paragraphs are perfectly consistent because the intention of these two paragraphs is to say to the acquirer, focus on what has been acquired. Look only at this. Don't look at the intention of the acquirer. Don't look at the possibility of a market participant to replace the missing element and to continue to produce our output. Focus only on what has been acquired. So on this issue, we are recommending to not change the proposal in the exposure draft. Do you agree?
Yes, correct.
Yes. Definition of outputs. We are proposing two changes on the definition of outputs. The first one is to move a paragraph that now is in the basis of conclusion of the exposure draft, is basis for conclusion 17. It relates to the acquisition of a set of assets that is integrated in the acquirer and no longer produce revenue after the acquisition. We already say in the basis for conclusion that this is a set that has outputs. We want to move this statement from the basis for conclusion to the body of the standard. Our second recommendation is to clarify the term other revenue in the definition of outputs, because some respondents believe that this term can create divergence in practice. Our proposal is in paragraph 22, and so we are saying that other revenue means income arising from contracts that are within the entity ordinary activities, but are not within the scope of IFRS 15. Do you agree with these two recommendations? So move paragraph BC 19 to the standard and the proposal to amend the definition of outputs. Do you agree with this?
Thank you. I think we need to be careful to move the discussion BC into the body. As you analyzed very well in paragraph 22, I'm talking about the other revenue. Other revenue issue. So we are going to amend the output paragraph to explain other revenue.
Yes.
By replacing, you know, of this some income and they are from ordinary activities. But I don't think it's clear. However, this is some a little divergence from FASB's decision, right?
The wording will be different, yes. But I don't think that this is a real difference, because the intention is to say, and this is clear in the basis for conclusion of the FASB amendment, we have revenue in the scope of IFRS 15, and we have other revenue that are outside the scope of IFRS 15. So we are consistent, in my view, with the basis for conclusion of the FASB amendments. The wording will be different.
But the FASB is they put this clarification in the PC.
Yes, you can
see. But in our case, we are putting this part in the body.
Yes,
it's also the location is different.
We are promoting the words of the FESP.
Yes.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, the benefit of clarification might not exceed the cost of divergence from the US GAAP. That's what my point is. So I don't, if there's a big benefit of clarification, then let's respect the facts of the decision. You know what I mean? The different locations.
This morning, I think when we discussed the issues that Chung-Wa, you prefer, you know, more authoritative, you know.
Okay, François.
Well, I support adding the piece from the basic into the standard, and I also support modifying the definition of outputs the way you have suggested. I think we have a much simpler way of getting to where you're aiming at, because we have a definition of revenue that says income arising in the course of an entity's ordinary activities. So we don't have to take designation of goods and services and revenue arising from activities that are not in the scope of IFRS 15. I think we say revenue, and that's it.
Okay.
Where are you taking that from, Francois, that revenue definition?
From IFRS 15.
But it doesn't apply unless you've got it in scope. So I'm not sure, because isn't the intention to make it apply for things that are outside the scope of 15?
But the definitions that we consider...
I don't think they apply between standards unless we're very specific.
I hope that it does, because if the meaning of words would change when you change from standard to standard, that would be very confusing.
It does. Usually if we're going to use the same term, we're very explicit that we're using the same definition.
Sorry, Peter, do you have...
The literature works at the moment, Francois. Maybe we can change it going forward, but I'm just pointing out that I think we couldn't assume that it would be the same definition unless we expressly put that somewhere.
The other way we thought of drafting it was revenue as defined in IFRS 15.
We could do it that way.
As defined.
But which I think
Peter,
the same.
In the conceptual framework, is there a definition of revenue there?
No.
We remove it?
No, we stuck with the elements of assets, liability, income, and expense.
I always read the definitions as being IFRS definition that were particularly irrelevant into the standard. So I've learned something today. Better reading.
So did I.
If we do that, we say it specifically.
Yeah. So we'll look again in drafting it, whether it would be better to simplify it in the way that Francois suggested, just by a cross-reference, or whether it's better to keep the sort of spelt-out wording here.
Yes, this is a preliminary wording. The important thing that we're saying, revenue within the scope of IFRS 15, other revenue means revenue outside the scope of IFRS 15. Then the wording we can...
Thank you. I respect your wording in the paragraph 61, which you are talking about the convergence with FASB. We try to minimize the differences. However, this does not mean that the board should ignore suggestions received from respondents only because those suggestions would lead to differences in the requirement. So the convergence with FASB is important, but it should not be determined. So I respect that. So in this respect, I checked this your suggestion. Especially, I appreciate your suggestion in paragraph 20. It clarifies the acquisition of supplier means business, even if it doesn't produce direct revenue. So we have to make clear it. So I really appreciate your clarification.
Okay, Mary, also a word of appreciation. Yes.
I have a couple questions in concept, in terms of what we're trying to do. I agree with the direction. I just have a couple questions about how we're doing it. First of all, paragraph 20, I may just be misreading this, but you have the sentence, we think that this statement would not be consistent with FASB's ASU. And then it doesn't, then as far as I can tell, you don't go on to explain why being inconsistent with FASB's ASU doesn't matter. And so I was like, do we mean we think this statement would not be inconsistent with FASB? But the quote that you gave, it's just, we say do this, it's not consistent with FASB's ASU, and then we don't explain why, but we think that doesn't matter because it's the same. So I just feel like there's a missing explanation there that I kind of wanted before I decided on that one. And then in paragraph 22, I may be not so dissimilar from Francois in terms of looking at trying to simplify that. I can see why you're saying change or other revenue to or other income. But the rest of this, arising from contracts that are within the entity's ordinary activities that are not within the scope of IFRS 15, I've spent lots of time reading IFRS 15, but I'd have to go back and reread it to see if people think of 15 as being income rather than revenue. I think we think of 15 as a revenue standard. And so I'm just wondering whether the whole rest of that modification, you know, your proposed addition, whether we could just end it at or other income, if our point is income. So I'm not against in either, you know, I understand why you want to respond to the comments, and I think you're looking for the minimalist way to do it. I feel like for the first one, I haven't yet figured out what the assessment of benefit versus cost is from diverging, because all it says is this is not consistent with FASB's ASU. And then for 22, even before I think about how many words we differ from FASB by, I'm just wondering if I thought of it strictly from an I for us only perspective, or whether we need anything more than or other income in terms of how much we have to explain, particularly in the body of the amendments to the standard as opposed to in the basis. So just two questions, either answer now or answer later as you think about the drafting.
15 does define revenue as income arising from the use of words.
Yes,
right.
Yes. We are quoting the word from IFRS 15, yes.
But do we really think if what we're trying to get to is, let's say, dividends or investment income, you know, as a possibility?
But that's before that.
Would we, but I think this change in wording at the end is intended to encompass, you know, other types of income that are outside 15, and if it is, I don't think many people would think of dividends as arising from a contract.
But isn't investment
income?
No,
but it's before.
Investment income such as dividends or interest,
yeah, yes,
or other income. So it's, yeah, not trying to catch dividends and interest.
Okay.
It's before, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But and then paragraph 20.
Also, yes, paragraph 20. Okay. In my view, our proposal is inconsistent with the FASB amendments.
Inconsistent.
Also, the exposure draft was inconsistent with the FASB amendment, because according to the FASB amendment, asset as output if the set produce revenue before and after the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
This is the FASB amendment. Our exposure draft, the set as output if it produce revenue before the transaction. So if you acquire a supplier and integrate the supplier, doesn't produce output after the transaction, for us, for the exposure draft and for our final amendments, the acquired set as outputs, and so the requirement to apply substantive process assessment is easier. Okay. This is not a change from the exposure draft. I'm only highlighting that there is a difference with FASB amendments. I do every time there is a difference.
Okay. So it sounds to me then that what we want to be saying is, first, we decided to affirm a difference that we proposed in the ED.
Yes,
and this is because we are focusing on whether what's acquired is at the point of acquisition a business rather than how it is intended to be used.
Except
after the acquisition. We're making kind of an objective assessment just based on the characteristics at the acquisition date.
Perfect.
Okay. So that's the kind of explanation. So that highlights it's a deliberate deviation that was in the ED as well as here.
Okay.
Leo, you know, from this discussion, I think we can find the way to how to draft. But the key is, you know, this, you know, changes include the revenues in line with 15, also include revenue or income outside of 15, all right?
Outside 15, yes, yes.
Okay, next topic.
Yes, this may appear a big change, but in my view, this is only a consequential amendment. When we did the exposure draft, I forgot to modify the definition of a business in Appendix A. This was my fault, okay? Because we modified the definition of output, but I didn't modify in Appendix A the definition of business. So some respondent noted that I forgot to modify the definition of business, and now I'm proposing to align the wording of the definition of a business to the new wording of the definition of outputs. This is the proposal, and is in paragraph 27. Do you agree with this?
A simple question. It seems really reasonable. I forgot, you're right, I'll do it. You know, but then paragraph 28 gives a really long paragraph from FASB explaining why, even though they had that kind of alignment before, they introduced misalignment, and here's like a page of why they think misalignment would be inappropriate.
Alignment.
You know, is there anything, when I read it, it was hard for me to tell, not a criticism of the paper, it was hard for me to tell whether it's stuff that's specific to US GAAP in terms of covering not-for-profits or something, or, you know, just what you explained, I forgot, I'll do it, seems really simple, but then why did FASB go through such knots not to do it?
No, I'm reporting for transparency the basis for conclusion of FASB, because so you have all the elements to decide. In my view, this is a consequential amendment, but if you have a different view, you can read the basis for conclusion that is in paragraph 28 of the paper. To be honest, I disagree with the basis for conclusion, but it's only my personal view, so.
Okay, Tuck?
Yes, I disagree with staff's recommendation this time, because changing definition is a little bit big things than just changing other part. Because I don't think it is not very much inconsistent with B7.
But we had already changed it, no?
Yeah, we changed B7, but this is just talking only about output. But the definition of business is not just output, including input, process, and output. So then the definition of business could be kind of more high-level wording, and that it doesn't automatically change. If we change the output wording, it will automatically change the high-level wording of definition of business. Of course, if we make a consistent wording, that would be clearer. However, as you pointed out, it would cause the divergence of definition itself. So I don't think it's really worth doing that, because even if we have inconsistency with the wording of output, I think we can live with it.
Yeah, I agree with Pat. If you see paragraph 28, the basis for conclusion of the FASB, they think differently. So they decide not to change anything on the definition of a business. So for example, the FASB decided the definition output does not change the state purpose of a business.
Yes.
So their paragraph established that business consists of activity and assets, and the purpose of these assets, activity, which is to provide activity. So in this case, if we change the definition of business, really divergence from the FASB's is much, much bigger than the previous one. So benefit, there's no big benefit. However, I'm saying, the context of the definition of the business is a little different from the context, the definition of only the output. Yes. That's what I understand.
Yes, but if you look at the definition of output in page 10, letter C, output, we deleted in the exposure draft the ability to provide a return in the form of dividends, lower cost, or other economic benefits directly to investor, and so on. The current definition of a business, the part that we are proposing to delay it, is a return in the form of dividends, lower costs, or other economic benefits directly to investors or other owners, members or participants. It's exactly the same word,
yes,
that we are proposing to delete. To me, this is consistency between B7.
But literally, yes. But the meaning, high-level meaning, is this business contains overall procedure, including input and procedure and output. But what we changed is only output. And it used to have same wording, we changed output. That is, does not automatically change the definition of business. Of course, if we change it, it's better. It's better, but you know, changing the definition is, as I said, is more significant.
I understand that this may appear a big change, and I understand this. Mm.
But if we don't change it, and it does interest me the FASB just decided not to, but prima facie, if we don't change it, doesn't it mean that when you start reading the standard, you're told that you need to work out whether you've got a business combination or not? You look at the definition of a business and it tells you to look for this thing, right? So you might be looking for a thing that's got all of these features, including lower costs, which we're now going to delete. So that's what I think I'm being asked to do. And then all the guidance I go to tells me to test for something different. So we'd have an internal inconsistency within our requirements.
Exactly.
Prima facie, and unless I'm missing something, unless we change the definition to match the application guidance. So I don't understand how we could not amend the definition.
Ah, okay.
Just can I respond
to... I'm agreeing with you in a very long-winded way.
We should allow Leonardo to correct his mistake.
Yeah, what Sue said, I agree. I take your point. However, lower cost here does not necessarily mean the lower cost which we were using, because we made it clear in the paragraph 20, even in the case of you acquired supplier, then that is the part of the business. So to acquire supplier means to lower the cost, and it's still a business.
I just picked that because it was the easiest thing for me to see as I was reading it, but my more general point is, if we think changing the words means something different, otherwise why would we change the words? We're asking somebody to test for something different to what they then apply in the application guidance, which to me just seems like we're setting people up to not know what the hell they're doing.
Can I just see who supports the staff recommendation?
No. I was going to make a suggestion for something halfway in between.
Oh.
To at least ask the staff to explore, which is, I agree with Sue absolutely about, especially on the point of lower cost, given that we're taking that out, and to keep it in the definition seems crazy. But if I think about definitions and your point about keeping them more brief and not incorporating everything, the key elements here is managed for the purpose of providing a return to investors or other owners, members, or participants. That seems the essence. We have the amplification of what's in outputs in the application guidance. We don't need to pick up all the words that are inconsistent with FASB. The words we would be keeping with that much shorter description would be less than FASB has, but would all be present in FASBs. So maybe think about that kind of edited down version that eliminates the inconsistencies with the revisions to outputs, but doesn't go, you know, way off in terms of differences. So it's just an integrated set of activities and assets that's capable of being conducted and managed for the purpose of providing a return to investors or other owners, members, or participants.
I saw a benefit in having the definition of outputs being aligned in the two, so that you know that you're talking about the same thing. Just that. It's incredible the number of questions that people raise or when the words are just different. Even if it's more concise and reads better, I think having the definition of output replicated here means we're talking about outputs. The same thing.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
Nine.
Okay, the next topic is the guidance on substantive process. The guidance that we propose in the exposure draft is summarized in paragraph 30 of the paper. In summary, we require more persuasive evidence when the set has no output and when the acquired set does not include a workforce. This is, in summary, our guidance on our substantive process. we are recommending to confirm this guidance, and we are recommending only one change to this guidance, that is a clarification, that is the clarification in paragraph 40, I think, yes, paragraph 14. We want to add that difficulties in replacing a workforce may indicate that the workforce is performing a substantive process. We propose to add this additional indicator to help entities in assessing whether a substantive process has been acquired. Do you agree with this recommendation? So to confirm the guidance substantive process and to add this additional indicator.
Mary.
I can see it as an indicator, but I can't see it as a direct test, because there are lots of things that may take time or involve significant cost or effort to do. But the test, this is an experience from IFRS 15 that I'm channeling. You know, let's not set up indicators as so that they become alternative tests. We have to make clear when indicators are supporting, that we keep clear what is the test. And to me, the test is the process critical to the ability to convert inputs? And I think rather than setting this up as here's how you test it, which takes people away from that's the question you have to answer, you could set it up as the fact that it may take significant cost efforts or delay to replace it may be an indicator that they're doing that, but let's not make it determinative.
I see the Stefan nodding.
Does that make sense?
I want to clarify my intention, okay? If we go to paragraph 38, in paragraph B12A of the exposure draft, we require, a set that does not have outputs is a business only if it includes a workforce. The acquired workforce is able to perform an acquired substantive process, and that acquired substantive process is critical to the ability to develop, convert, and I think that the difficulty in replacing a workforce may indicate that the workforce performs a substantive process, so may help in assessing the step in 38B.
Yeah, how are you going to phrase
how
this?
To draft, I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is Mary's point.
I read paragraph 40 as you saying we have B12A, and then we say you can test this by seeing if it's difficult, et cetera, et cetera. And then I think what would happen is people would just end up focusing on making the arguments that it's difficult, costly, causes delays.
The very last sentence says may indicate that the workforce performs, yes. Which is what I took to be the recommendation in that paragraph, and that seems to be setting it up as an indicator rather than an absolute.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Agreed. Yes. Okay.
The additional guidance on acquired outsourcing agreement. The guidance proposed in the special draft is in paragraph 42 of the paper. There is a strong support for this guidance, and we are recommending to confirm the guidance and to add an example to explain how to apply this guidance. So our recommendation is to confirm this guidance and to explain better in an example how to apply this guidance.
Mary.
Fred Hans is going to kill me before we get to the end of this paper, but...
Well, you're really on a roll, Mary, so I don't want to stop you.
Okay, one question, and I'm sorry, it may be here, and I just may be missing it. I don't remember a discussion about whether this is something that FASB has addressed or not. Again, I agree with others who say that's not a limit on what we do, but I think I want to know how close we're staying or how far we're going when we talk about making changes. And second question is in paragraph 45. You make the comment it would be acquired through an acquired outsourcing agreement for the whole useful life of the process. And I'm not sure that's right or wrong. I'm just not sure where it's come from, because my recollection is that the exposure draft talked very briefly about assessing whether in substance you'd acquired a workforce with an outsourcing agreement, and we didn't say anything more other than you had to, you know, considering, for example, the duration. Exactly. I'm a bit worried overall. I'm a bit worried overall that we're letting the tail wag the dog, that people want guidance about how you assess outsourcing arrangements and what they are in substance. And we were deliberately very, very limited in what we said because we wanted to give a clear marker that when we said you had to acquire a workforce, we wouldn't absolutely preclude acquiring a workforce via an outsourcing agreement, but we were just making the point that you had to, in substance, acquire a workforce, as opposed to just have a contract in place that gave you bodies for a short period of time. And we decided not to say anything more. And again, I'm going to channel IFRS 15. We kept getting asked lots of questions about cost and how you did accounting for costs in connection with revenues. And we tried to be disciplined in terms of not addressing a lot of cost questions, because then it would become a cost standard as well. And I'm worried that while these are really valid questions, we may be going further than just addressing the point of, can you acquire a workforce if the workforce is outsourced? And I think the answer we gave in the ED is yes, if it's of a sufficient duration. And I'm worried that, I'm a bit concerned that what you're talking about amplifying will be a lot more discussion about workforce that's maybe disproportionate to the question we should be focusing on. Did you acquire a workforce or not?
My intention is not to include the paragraph 45 in the basis. Or No, I know that this is a very complex area of judgment, and so we will draft the example and then we will send to you, but I don't want to add guidance in the example that is not in the standard. So in the standard we say you have to consider the duration and the renewal terms of the contract. Stop. This is the standard. We only do an example to explain how to apply this guidance. Mm-hmm.
So just to really clarify, you are just saying to us that actually what is coming in the final drafting is somewhat what you said in paragraph 47 in the very end, right?
47?
Yeah.
Consequently, the last sentence, consequently, in our
yes,
view?
Yes.
So in short, this is the outcome of the
proposal. And this is already in the exposure draft.
Exactly.
This is only a confirmation of the exposure test.
But it did sound like we're going to add an example and we're going to add guidance into the standard that's consistent with the example.
No. Only if you agree, only an example, if you agree.
Françoise?
Yeah, I regarding this paragraph B12C in the guidance, I agree with what you say in paragraph 47. Except that I'm not sure that the guidance is sufficiently clear to everyone. And so we say basically people can understand that they have to exercise judgment, because you say whether the substantive process that the entity controls, but you don't tell people on what basis they're going to assess that.
Yes, we only say considering the duration and the renewal terms of the contract. In the exposure draft, we say only this.
And people are telling you, that maybe
short of guidance. I know people want more guidance, but I think that this is outside of the scope of this project. This is not easy to do.
I mean, will it be easy to apply?
It's always...
I think it would be easier than us being silent about outsourcing contracts, because we at least give certainty that it's valid to consider that.
We received very good feedback on this guidance. People that says this is very this is a complex area of judgment. There is diversity in practice. We appreciate this guidance, even though it's limited. It's better than nothing.
So. that's what you are saying in paragraph 48 at the very end, right?
Yes.
That you are bringing to us...
To be honest, I'm very scared to do an example of this.
So your proposal at the end of the day is...
If you disagree with my recommendation to do an example, I will be very happy.
I'm going to agree to it.
But I think that we should try to do an example
to us,
without adding more guidance. If we fail, we fail.
Okay. Well, you give it your best effort.
Yeah.
Huh? If you fail, you fail.
I think if we fail to get to an example, then we come to the conclusion that people will lack guidance to apply.
Well, I think the question is whether adding an example that adds nothing to the body, whether that's going to be helpful to people or not.
Maybe in drafting the example, you're going to identify what is missing in the body.
It might be.
Yeah. Excellent. So, agreed?
Good luck.
Yeah. Try. I agree you should try.
Try.
I don't agree anything. We must get something in.
A very tentative decision. illustrative example. The recommendation is to confirm all the 11 examples included in the exposure draft. We received thousands of recommendations of suggestions how to improve the examples. I think that we need to clarify in each example, these are the assumptions, these are the conclusions. I noted reading all the comments that sometimes the assumptions are not very clear, and so people disagree with the conclusion. So we cannot discuss the example in a public meeting because we need days, but I will send to you the revised draft. And I will try to keep more aligned as possible with FASB examples.
Well, and I think the other common theme in the comments was the need to make sure the examples are tied back very clearly to the body text, so people can see what the reasoning is.
And we'll
thank you. On this is paragraph 50 and D. There are some respondents said some concerns with example D.
Yeah.
The facility, if the facility is temporarily closed down, then that example D concludes this is not a business. So below that thing, this respondent is saying there might be some abuse using this example D. So if they would like to have some kind of asset acquisition accounting, they'll close down the facilities temporarily. So it's very interesting concern here.
It's costly, yeah.
But I'm just worrying about this the point of this, I don't know who made this, 26 is IOS committee.
I think that we need to clarify in the fact pattern, in the assumption of the example, why the facility is closed down.
Okay.
Yeah, you have no question.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Goodwill, the last one. This is a change from the exposure draft. In the exposure draft, we propose to remove from paragraph B12 the presumption that the presence of goodwill indicates that the acquired set of asset is a business. And we propose to specify that the presence of an insignificant amount of goodwill does not mean that the acquired asset should automatically be considered a business. Some respondents noted that the presence of goodwill as a separate indicator may not be consistent with the guidance on substantive processes. So they suggested to delete this additional indicator on the presence of goodwill. We agree with the suggestion because reading the comment received, we think that this additional indicator creates more confusion than benefits, and so we are recommending to delete this additional indicator. So, significant
goodwill.
Yes, with the presence of goodwill as a separate indicator. This will be a difference with the FASB amendments.
Jambu.
Sorry. I don't agree with your recommendation removing this Goodyear test. There are some concerns with the, you know, this kind of Goodyear test. However, I think some reasons why I don't like removing this one. This is another divergence from the FASB's decision. Another thing is this Goodyear test is a kind of a similar test of the fair value concentration.
No. You have only two tools, the fair value concentration and the guidance of substantive process.
Yes.
When you assess whether you have acquired a substantive process, in this assessment, if you noted that in the set of assets there is an insignificant goodwill, this is an indicator that you have acquired a substantive process, but you are assessing whether you have acquired a substantive process. In my view, it's consistent, but reading the comment received, many people think that this additional indicator is not consistent with the guidance of substantive process. So we are proposing to delete this indicator.
But I wondered if that's because it doesn't actually just say that. It says when evaluating this, the presence of more than an insignificant amount of goodwill may be an indicator that an acquired process is substantive and the set of activities and assets is a business. It doesn't just say that, it doesn't just focus on the acquired process, and I wondered whether those words at that end of the sentence was making people confused with how that then fitted in with the more comprehensive analysis of whether you had a business. Do you see where I'm looking?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me the reason the reference to goodwill is unhelpful is because it gets people focused on the accounting number we generate if we end up accounting for it as the acquisition of a business. And so then they get hung up about the things that aren't really to do with economic goodwill but are to do with some of the slightly strange accounting anomalies you sometimes get in that calculation. I mean, they mentioned the deferred tax one, for example. And of course, you only know if you've got an accounting number if you've gone through the whole process already, which you would only really do if you'd already decided it was a business. And so I think the reference to goodwill doesn't actually really add anything, because I think what was intended is economic goodwill and all the sorts of things you get when you acquire a business as a whole. But that's already captured by the discussion of substantive process as well. So I think the reference to goodwill adds nothing and just causes confusion.
Mary?
Don't object to the staff recommendation. I think some of the points, Leo, that you were making about some respondents' concern about potential circularity and what Peter was saying about could be read as shifting the focus to the accounting rather than the economics are reasons to think about removing it. But I think what it would be very important if we decide to go ahead and remove it is to explain in the basis for conclusion that we continue to believe that the presence of economic goodwill is an indication that the acquired process is substantive. We had enough feedback that suggested that there would be confusion, that it was drawing people to turn their focus away from what we think is the central test, which is whether there's been a substantive acquired, whether there's been a substantive process acquired, and with that we don't think that this is a difference from FASB, in substance, although it's a different in words, because we never meant it to be a step in the process that we were just observing, that the presence of economic goodwill had this implication. And so we're kind of taking it out of the main body but explaining why it isn't a change in thinking in the basis. But one overall comment I wanted to make, thinking about all these different moving parts and the different pieces here, is, people asked us, but particularly you, the staff working on this, to accomplish the impossible, make all these improvements and respond to all my input, but then align with a document that has been finalized by somebody, and accomplish all this miraculously. And I think making the assessment that they've asked us to think about in terms of balancing convergence and consistent wording with addressing what are, you know, real practice concerns. It's something that we have to do, kind of looking at all of it. And you know, you pointed out to me that at the beginning there's a this paper, there's a comment that you plan to bring back a summary of comparison with the changes that FASB is making. I think it might be worth thinking about how we stand back and make that assessment, maybe even thinking if the timing, especially if the timing will work, about talking to our Accounting Standards Advisory Forum and kind of getting those people to look at something that focuses just on what we've decided to do and where that leaves differences falling out, to get a sense of people's reaction to how we're balancing the two sometimes inconsistent streams of feedback that we got. So that might be a way of standing back and looking at it all.
Yes?
Yes.
For the last intervention of this last item on the agenda of this board meeting, I give the floor to the member for whom this will be the last time he participates in this board meeting, Mr. Zhang Wei Guo.
Thank you very much. On this issue, I will not agree, not because purely... No. Because it's because indicators are indicators, not criteria. You know, if keep it useful, it is useful. And I will feel it is useful. And, you know, give explanations as suggested by Peter. It's okay, but I will feel useful. And secondly, go back to the previous decisions. I will change my vote on the definition of the revenue part. Think through, you know, when we discuss other issues, I think Taka may be right. You know, low cost and other benefits not equal to income or revenue. And I would suggest you think carefully further. But it doesn't matter because I will not sign it. Thank you very much.
So does this conclude our...
Just for the update.
Yes.
So on the definition of outputs, 8 board members agree and the other disagree. For all the other recommendations, all board members agree?
Some hesitantly.
In any case, imaginative numbers.
Yeah. Except I think on that last one, possibly the deletion of the reference to goodwill.
Ah, yes. Some of you disagree on the last one?
Agree.
Okay, so only on the definition of outputs. Okay.
Agree, but
I think Wei Guo might not agree.
Mary's suggestion.
Yes.
Obviously, Wei Guo did not agree. Yeah.
Agree on the goodwill.
Which gives a very befitting end to this last meeting in which Wei Guo participates. Never afraid to speak his mind. I'm going to give a longer speech later today, commemorating the farewell of Wei Guo. Here I just want to say, Wei Guo, you have been with us for 10 years. You were the first Chinese board member, and you have played a very important role here, but also back in your home country, China. I think you can be extremely proud of what you have achieved, and we are extremely grateful for the input that you have delivered in that decade. So we thank you very much, and we know for certain that we will continue seeing you in the future wherever you're going to live. I hope you have made a decision on that by now, but probably not. Anyway, our paths will continue to cross because you will stay active in accounting and in helping China forward in its continuous road. Well, hopefully it will end one day to full convergence with IFRS. But thank you very much. Okay, that's it.